Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimaginedonline.org, covering the stories in the new world of public education. On part two of this two-part episode, we join Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill and NLP Logic's manager Jen Bradshaw on a presentation hosted by Kevin Roberts of Robots and Pencils, a digital innovation firm. The three continue discussing the online platform being built by the two organizations, with the goal of better leveraging data through artificial intelligence to help families make decisions with the spending power of their education savings accounts. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So we already started to touch on some of our solutions and how we're really going to be leveraging technology to bridge this gap. But I really wanted to take it back, not just talking about the data, but really talking about the data from a parent's perspective, but the data from how Step Up as an organization can now start to leverage this data. So Doug has a saying that he wants to delight his customers. Well, his parents, his schools, the service providers that are offering their services to these parents, these are all their customers. Customer is really anybody but yourself. And so we can take data and we can start to make them proactive in their decision-making. I think Doug had mentioned previously, you know, families have specific saturation across the state of Florida right now within these scholarship programs. Well, we can take this data, we can present it back to SUF so that we can say, hey, it really looks like you have families in the southeastern part of the state, and they don't have enough access to service providers. So it's also ensuring that Step Up can truly be proactive in getting the service providers. They got to do a marketing campaign. Let's go and try to find the appropriate service providers specific to the families that have those specific needs within southeastern Florida. So there's so much that we can do with data and present this information both to the parents and guardians, but also to Step Up as well, so they can help get the appropriate amount of resources available to these families. And Doug, I don't know if you have anything you wanted to add in there.
But if you have a child with a special need, by law, if you're in a district school, they have to create what's called an IEP, an individualized education plan. But you know, basically every child is unique. I mean, who doesn't have a child who's not unique? Even those of us who have multiple children know that each child is very different. And so part of our plan is ultimately to develop an individualized education plan for every child. Every child ought to be seen as unique. Every child deserves to have a customized education plan that fits their particular need. And this is another area where AI is going to be critical. The reason it doesn't happen today in the district schools and in private schools is that it's just overwhelmingly, the workload is too much. This is an area where technology can help us, because if you read 50 IEPs, there's not that much variation. So you can see software being trained to look at various characteristics of kids, having seen, you know, 50,000 other IEPs, say, look, this is probably the best fit for your particular child, a little bit of customization, you know, with the families. We can use that kind of data to make sure that every child has access to, and every family has an individualized education plan, and then they can spend their ESA funds to implement that plan. By the way, that also is helpful politically, because, you know, one of the reasons that you have such overregulation in a lot of our government programs is because people want to make sure that the dollars are being spent appropriately. That's a really important need, but it also leads to all this bureaucracy, all this regulation. And that regulation oftentimes inhibits people's ability to be successful and to be effective and efficient. And so part of what we want to do is find a proper balance between making sure that every tax dollar is spent as effectively and efficiently as possible, but do that in a way that doesn't so overregulate our families and our schools and our other providers that the whole process begins to break down. You basically just reinvent the old system, because it becomes a very top-down command and control regulatory system. So we're trying to find that right balance. We're trying to use data, AI, to find that proper balance between assuring the taxpayers and the political system that you're getting a great ROI, return on investment for your money, but also making sure that families have the flexibility so they really can customize an education for each child, and also make sure they have the information that allows them to make really good decisions. All that together, I think, is the secret sauce we're trying to put together that would not be possible, obviously, without technology. Another example of what we're talking about, and we wanted to find an example that people, most people are familiar with. A lot of us have 401ks. And so, and that the 401k has software that'll sit down with you and say, okay, you're 45 years old. Where do you want to be when you're 65 or 70? And you have a dialogue with the software, and the software then comes back and says, here are some recommendations for how you ought to be managing your funds to get to you where you want to be when you're 70 years old. Well, we want to apply the same kind of concept to families working with kids who are 8 or 9. Where do you want your child to be when he or she graduates from high school? What kind of things should be happening now in with your 8-year-old to get him from here to there? What kind of choices should you be making? What kind of things should you be looking at? Maybe your child is struggling as a reader. You really need to invest some of your ESA funds in reading. Maybe a tutor. Here are some high-rated tutors in your community you might want to take a look at. Here's a really outstanding remediation program after school or summer program in your community. You should be spending your ESA dollars there. Here are some schools in your community in which the reading scores are very, very high, in which the growth in reading has been really, really high. These are places you might want to take a look at. So again, you're trying, just like in the 401k example, where what should you be doing with your investments in order to get from here to there? What should you be doing with your ESA investments to get your child from here to there? So that's basically what Jen and her team at NLP are doing with us, using our data to help us using AI to provide that kind of feedback to families. The team knows I rant a lot about social capital. There's a lot of really powerful research looking at the impact of social capital on children's success. There's a team out of Harvard, for example, that looks at neighborhoods, and they can say a child in this neighborhood has these kind of possibilities of being successful, whereas a child 5 blocks over in another neighborhood has very different kinds of opportunities. And you know, I guarantee you, everybody on this phone call, when they were growing up, had access to very important social capital that allowed them to get to where they are today. Jen mentioned earlier when she got her job, it was who she knew. Well, that's part of social capital. Well, a lot of kids grow up in neighborhoods in which there's no college graduates. No one's going to get them an internship at a vet's office or a doctor's office. You know, those are the kind of experiences using your connections that allow people to transform their lives. And so that's going to be one of the variables that comes into our formula. So what kind of social capital do you have in your neighborhood? If you don't have much social capital, maybe what you should do is spend your ESA funds to attend an after-school boys club in a neighborhood in which there is a lot of social capital. So maybe you end up having a sleepover with kids that historically you never would have slept over at their house. It's a different sort of class, a different kind of environment. And now you make connections, and those connections lead you to all kinds of opportunities in life that you normally wouldn't have. And so much of our success in life is based on the connections that we have, the social capital. And I just wanted to use this as an example. When we put our formula together, we're looking at a variety of variables, including things like social capital, because if you look at the research, social capital, access to social capital has a huge impact on children's ability to be successful later on in life.
And just want to add on to that, Doug. So we were just discussing data and what types of data we're going to have. This is exactly the type of data that we are going to be storing. So this is required data that eligible families have to complete during the application process. So it will make our recommendations very poignant for them, because we're going to be able to look at where they live. We're going to understand what census tract they are a part of. We're going to understand their household income. We're even going to get to the level of understanding of how many adults and students and other children live in that household that are working off of that household income. So that's how we're going to be able to then provide the recommendations that Doug is talking about. So we're going to have all of this data available to make the appropriate recommendations at this level.
The other point I wanted to make is we have been blessed with a lot of investments from national foundations into the platform. Obviously, there's millions of dollars invested in this platform. And part of our commitment in exchange for the investments that the foundations have made in our nonprofit is that we would make this platform available in other states. And so coming soon to a state near you is going to be this platform would be made available. So as more states start creating educational savings accounts, as more states get comfortable with customization, with providing every child and family with the ability to individualize an education, a public education for each child, we're going to be able to make this platform available. And as we add more states and more populations, more states onto the platform, that's just more data. And that data will allow us to get better and better and better at providing the kind of feedback that families need, whether you're in Florida or Texas or Colorado or wherever you are, in order to make sure that all families have access to these kind of opportunities. So I also think these kind of tools are going to help legislators have more confidence, because I think oftentimes they are worried about giving families more control of their education dollars. They're worried about the return on investment. And if we can show legislators that the taxpayers and the general public good is going to be well served by this, that we can really make parents a much better partner in their kids' education, then I think you're going to see this spread around the country. And we'll have this kind of infrastructure that I think gives a lot of confidence to families and to the political class in each state.
So, Doug, Jen, there's a question that came in, which I think it's a good one, and maybe it's a good time to address it. Talking about all this data, I mean, clearly this is rich and it's important and it is so informative. But all of us that have been around for a while, we know that that's also the devil lies in those details, right? Is how do you, it's the collection and aggregation of that data. Can you talk a little bit about how you come across it? So you mentioned an application earlier. You mentioned, I'm guessing, tiring to census databases and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges around ingesting and identifying all the data elements that you collect?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. Doug and I always have this conversation. He comes to us and says, what do we need to know now so that we can showcase a recommendation in the future? So right. That's exactly what we're working through right now. Like, what will prevent us from having an accurate model to represent to a parent in the recommendation engine? And so that's why we have asked for the full purchase transaction history and then associating it to this concept of an IEP. Doug, I think it would be helpful if you kind of gave a brief overview of the types of characteristics that you're going to see in the IEP, because what this is going to really allow us to do is back into this information. So we're going to do a big data mapping exercise to match up what Step Up is creating, this IEP, this individualized education plan for their students. And we're going to tie these data elements, these characteristics, to their purchase history. And so that's where we're starting. I'm sure, going to miss things, and we're going to have to retrofit. And the next thing that's going to come with that is a review. We need to allow a parent to tell us, we're going to go with a Likert scale of, did the service meet the expectation? Did the product meet the expectation? And so these are the high level themes of the types of data elements we know we need to capture.
You know, what's been really interesting, Kevin, is our staff has been really, and this is a very positive comment I'm trying to make, has been taking the school by NLP in terms of our data. You know, a lot of organizations collect a lot of data, but we're not necessarily that sophisticated in how we do it. And the partnership with NLP has been fascinating, because they've really, you know, educated us on, here's the kind of data you need to collect. Here's the form in which you try to collect it. Here's the kind of data warehouses that we need to have. Here's how we have to be able to search the data. And so there's a whole sort of revolution inside Step Up in terms of thinking about data, and having an AI partner is so transformational, because the data scientists can really educate us about how we should be collecting data, how we should be organizing data. I mean, an ideal world, every organization that's collecting data ought to have a partnership with some data scientists, because ultimately you want that data to be as valuable as possible. And so many of us collect all this data. I mean, I guarantee at the higher ed institutions, Kevin, there's a ton of data sitting in the corner, and we spend all these resources to collect the data. We spend all these resources to house it, and nobody ever maximizes the value of that data. And so having an AI partner, I mean, I would recommend everybody who's collecting data at some level to have an AI partner to educate them about what kind of data should you be collecting. You got privacy issues you need to manage effectively. You know, there's data that you want, there's data that you don't want to keep, you know? And so having that relationship is really, really important. And I just want to say it's been transformational from our team at StepUp, because we talk a lot now about figuring out how to collect data, but do it in a way that in partnership with NLP Logix, because we want to make that data as user-friendly as possible for NLP. But yeah, well, ultimately, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's really inspirational to hear about that, because what you did is what so many of us fail to do, is to take the next step. So we, all of us, I guarantee everybody on this call or that's watching later on, we all recognize that our own individual institutions, the way we used to describe it is we are sitting on a mountain of data and for the life of us can't turn it into information, right? And so, but having that partner, someone to step alongside you, but really it's the courage to do what you guys did, Doug, to step out and say, all right, we're going to make a change here. We're going to try to use this data to inform us to make better decisions for the folks that we serve. And man, it's really inspirational to hear you guys take the first step, right? And that's that first step is always the hardest, I guess.
Yeah, and again, you know, there's lots of other aspects of our economy that are way ahead of us, whether it's Netflix or whether it's Amazon. And as you said earlier, I like to think that education, you know, has a unique position in terms of how important it is. It's our primary human capital development infrastructure. Right. We spend, every state right. spends about half of the state budget in Texas and Florida is all spent on education. And so you would think that that would be an area where we really want to make sure we're using data to make the very best decisions, because you're affecting all these children's lives, which affects the whole quality of our society. So
we used to talk a lot about the Little House on the Prairie test and saying, all right, if you took Laura Ingalls and dropped her in today's world, what would be immediately recognizable? And sadly, our classrooms are one of the most recognizable, right? We have failed to transform in those areas. So I appreciate you guys stepping out of that. I'm going to give you a last, we got just a few more minutes, but want to turn it up and turn it over to you guys and dream a little bit about the future. So you've painted what to some of us feels futuristic that you're living day to day, right? And so some of us, that's like, oh my gosh, that's like Star Wars stuff. But want to hear from Jen, you and Doug, when you walk this forward, you're 5 years from now, where do you see this going? How do you see this playing out? What sort of bright future do you see building upon the work that you've already started?
Well, one of the things I think is important is that we have to appreciate that a lot of learning happens outside of school. And again, if I were to look at the lives of everybody on this phone call, I'm sure that a lot of your important human development experiences happen outside of 6 hours a day, 180 days a year. And for those of us who grew up in families that allowed us to participate in after-school sports programs or arts programs or go to summer camps, that sort of thing, those are a huge part of our learning and development. And I'd like for us to rethink about public education, not just in brick and mortar, you know, between the walls, 6 hours a day, 180 days a year, but think about it in a much broader sense. And think about the importance of making sure that all children have access to those additional developmental opportunities outside of school. You know, I mentor a lot of low-income kids in St. Pete. And for me to put a kid in Pop Warner football, it's like $600 for, you know, the equipment and the insurance and then the driving around, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I mean, but for me growing up, sports was life-changing. You know, I learned hard work. I learned teamwork. I learned, you know, how to get along with people who are very different than me. Even if we were trying to kill each other on the football field, you know, we still learn there's a camaraderie there, you know, and you learn how to work with other people. But a lot of kids don't have those opportunities. And so part of what I'd like to see is we redefine public education in a much broader sense, and that we really have, we honor a lot of the learning that happens outside of a traditional school. And we figure out how to take that into account, how to understand that, how to invest in it, how to value the experience so that we're willing to pay for it as a society, but also track it and use that data to sort of think about the holistic development of a child. So I'm hoping that's where we're headed, is that that all these various options are available to all children, and that we have a much broader understanding of education than what we do today. And by doing that, we are able to provide investments that provide much more equal opportunity than we have today.